Good morning to everyone. It's been a tremendous blessing being here this morning already, and the songs really ministered to me this morning. And thank you, Jeremy, for picking that, to trust and obey. And that just really ministered to me this morning. And it's so simple, but yet so difficult. And that's just a huge part of my story today in trusting God, into allowing God to have my full life and to trust him with it and to obey. And yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm also excited because I feel honored that I get to share what God has done. And as I wrestle with sharing this last week and how and what and just with everything, Psalms 103 kept continuing coming to my mind, and I'm just going to read part of it this morning. It starts in verse 1. It's, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies." And what stood out to me and what my heart is this morning is in verse 2. "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits." And this morning as I share, my heart is to remember those benefits. As I share my story, to remind myself again and hopefully to inspire you to remember the benefits of what God has done for you. And it says, forgiving all our iniquities, heals our diseases, redeems our life from destruction. And that's a lot of benefits if we walk with him and if we walk in the Spirit and to walk after him. Those are things that we can, and that's my heart this morning. As I share, is for myself, is to remember the benefits of a life after God. So I'm not sure what I tried writing stuff down, and I'm not sure what all is going to come forth and how everything's going to turn out, but I trust God that he will help me and that it will be, most of all, that his name will be lifted up. He will be exalted. I was born to Noah and Mary Miller. A lot of you know my parents. I was born into a family of 10. There's 5 brothers, 4 sisters. There's 3 older brothers and 2 older sisters, and it's me, and then it's 2 younger brothers and 2 younger sisters after me. And born into an old order Amish family, very thankful for the family I was born into, and yeah, just the things I was taught, the things I grew up. But it was also hard. It was not easy. As I grew older, my first memory that I remember that really impacted me and that kind of started my relationship with my dad, and we had a furniture shop. I grew up in a woodworking shop, and there was a lot of sawdust, and I remember my fifth or sixth birthday, I was always in the shop. I was scraping stuff together or using plywood and scraping sawdust together, and I guess Dad was observing, and one day he came home. It was a little before my birthday, if I remember right. He came home with a dump truck, a big yellow dump truck, and gave it to me for my birthday. And I was so delighted that he actually noticed that I could use a dump truck. And I played with that thing for hours on end. And I can't remember exactly the timeline of it, but a couple months later, one morning, Mom came and woke us up, and the shop's on fire. The shop's on fire. It's burning down. And the first thing that came to my mind was my dump truck. And I remember running out to the window and looking out, and there's flames bursting forth and fire trucks everywhere. And it just left a big impression in my little mind. And the next morning that afternoon after everything was kind of settled down and taken care of, I walked out. And I knew exactly where I had parked my dump truck. And that's the first thing I had in mind. And I went to my dump truck. And it was just a little pile of plastic. And I was so sad. And the thing that made me most, that left the impact and that hurt my heart that day was Dad came to me and was like, you have to throw it away. I wanted to keep it. I really wanted to keep it. And he was like, it's useless. You have to throw it. And there was a big trash bin that they had brought to throw all the garbage in. And he told me I had to throw it away. So I did. And before I threw it out, he told me that he'll buy me a new one. As he'll make sure that I get a new dump truck when everything's taken care of with the shop. He'll make sure that I get a new dump truck again. And I trusted him. I threw it away, and I never got a dump truck. And that was my first wound from my dad, and I remember very clearly, that he never bought a dump truck. And it blended mistrust. It blended anger and resentment, and that's something that I struggle with for years and years and years on end, is with that. And it continued to happen as I grew up, as I grew older. 6, 7 years old, I was introduced to a lot of immorality as a very young child. Satan had a hook in my soul at a very young age that I didn't know how to deal with it, and Dad didn't either, and Dad didn't help me with it. And as it continued, it continued. Dad continued. Things between me and my dad continued to come up like that. He didn't know how to relate. He didn't have a dad to teach him, and that was a big struggle in his life. And I never understood that. Why couldn't he just figure out how to be a dad? If he didn't have a dad, maybe, but he should know and figure it out. And that's my thinking as a little boy. I just never understood why. And 8 years old, my dad was 7 or 8. My dad was ordained minister. Never forget that either. And I, in a sense, lost my dad at that time, even though he was still there. And I don't know, I was very, very angry and bitter at Dad at that point already. And Dad would spend a lot of time in the office. And now I understand. I'm grateful for a dad that has the knowledge of God and that has been teaching us. But at that time, it was so hard for me to understand why Dad is spending more time with other people and helping them and teaching them and nurturing them and not us as a family. What really hurt and what really followed me in that is outside people looking in would praise our family for our godliness and for living after God and lifted up Dad and just really admired a lot of his teachings. And I believe they were right, and I believe it was a good thing. But inside of me, I was longing for that same thing that other people were getting. Why is Dad not spending time with our family? On the inside, us as a family were crumbling, especially as younger children. The older ones got married and moved out, and we were kind of left. And there was a lot of immorality. There was a lot of things going on that shouldn't have been going on, and it didn't get taken care of by our parents. And it brought a lot of pain and hurt in my life. In school years, I really struggled. I didn't like school. My mind and my heart were hurt and were burdened down with so many other things. I couldn't learn. I couldn't grasp what was trying to go on. So school years were very hard. I got into a lot of trouble. I had ADHD. I was everywhere at once, it seemed, and that's what Mom says. And I couldn't hold still for a minute. And I had just a lot of trouble through school years of learning and of being willing to sit and actually listen to people. And it's just very scattered. Anyway, I came out of school. I worked for Dad for a couple years, maybe a year, and I despised it. I did not like working in the shop. I'm not a fine art type of guy to sand and work in. I did not like it. So that caused a lot of problems in our relationship, as well as Dad and older brothers thought I should submit to Dad, and I just did not like it. And looking back now, I see I missed a tremendous opportunity to work under Dad and actually be a blessing to Dad. I worked for him for about a year, and then I started working for a guy that did roofing. And I enjoyed that. I got up early in the morning, and it was something to get adjusted to, but I used to at first, but I really enjoyed, I learned to enjoy that. I got up early in the morning, and I worked hard. I came home tired, and just the satisfaction of finishing up a house, and everything's nice and neat, and I just really learned to enjoy that and put my heart into that. So I did that for, I forget exactly how many years, but 4 or 5 years that I worked for him. And then me and actually worked for Elton some. And then after that, I went and worked for Elton, and me and my brother kind of took that over then. And I did roofing for, I think, a total of 8 years that I did roofing and just kind of construction. And, yeah, I really, really enjoyed that time of my life. It was a way of working hard and made a lot of money, and I didn't use it right in that time, but that was kind of my work history of what I did it for work. But in that time, when I turned 16, that meant I could start hanging out with the youth, going to singings. I did that, and I'll never forget my first singing. And but again, there's still habits and there's still patterns going on in my mind and in my life that were very unhealthy, very sinful and wicked, and it affected my relationships with my friends. And the group I was with at the time was very conservative and they tried to do what is right, and I would always buck that, and I would always get them in trouble. And well, when that happens, they pushed me out, and they hung out less with me, and they didn't really want me around anymore, and that hurt. Rejection, and I didn't know why I am the way I am. I didn't understand what made me the way I was at that time, and just the stuff, the immorality that was going on in my life and my thought life, and just everything was at that time, 16, 17, was such a mess, was such a disaster. Just I had no idea how to deal with it. It came to a point that it was just who I was. I just thought that's who I am. I'm going to be like this the rest of my life, and I kind of accepted it. It's just who I am. And I lived it out that way, and I didn't really understand the new birth. I didn't really understand what I had to do in order to change that and to renew my mind and to actually to continue or to change and to become a different man. I didn't understand that. And 16, 17, 17 and a half, it came to a point where I was just so tired. I was so sick of my life. I was wanted something different. And my other friends were joining church. And I thought, well, if they're joining church, that must be the right thing to do. And I didn't understand anything, but I joined the church at 17 and a half. And I got rid of all my stuff, my phone, and my radio, and my DVD players, and I got rid of everything. And I just somehow, some way, I figured it's going to change. And I was very excited. I will never forget the day of my baptism. I went to my baptism with an expectation that something's going to change today. I'm not going to be the same man today as I was yesterday. Something's going to change if once they baptize me and once I get up, something's going to change in my life, and I'm not going to be the same. And I'll never forget, I walked home from church that night, or that afternoon, and I cried. I'm still the same guy. Nothing felt different. Nothing changed. And the next weeks, maybe it takes a little while, maybe something, but nothing changed. A couple days went around, and all of a sudden, I actually came to realize nothing is going to change. But nothing happened. And I got on my bike and I went to Walmart and I bought a phone again, and I was straight back into everything that I was already. And I didn't understand why I felt lied to. I thought it's going, yeah, I just with my whole heart believe it's going to change. And that continued. I continued down that path, and it kept getting worse. It kept getting worse. I got into websites, I got into dating sites and stuff that I should have never found at that age. And at 18 and a half, 19, all of a sudden, I was like, why am I doing this? What's the plan? Where am I headed? There's nothing here. I was so miserable being Amish. I was stuck, and why don't I just drive? Why don't I just get a car? There's no use for me being here. And I pondered that for a while. I knew it was going to hurt Dad. I knew it was going to be hard for them. And it was, I was not leaving for the right reasons. I knew that. But I thought about it for quite a while until I actually pursued it. I started getting my license and kind of did it behind Mom and Dad's back until one day I couldn't continue because I realized I needed my birth certificate and that was locked in Dad's safe. And one day I just decided I've had enough. And kind of what was the final, that was later after I had my license, was I just went to Dad and said, I want my birth certificate. I said, I'm tired of it. I'm going to start driving. And he was like, oh, okay. And he didn't even really, I was surprised. He didn't even really say much. He just said, okay. And he gave it to me later that night, and I continued getting my license. And that was over a couple month period of time. And then over that time, while I was getting my license and I bought a cheap car, and one Saturday morning, Dad woke me at, I felt like the wee hours of the morning, but 7:30, and said that Brother David and him and some of the other brothers are meeting at Chitters. They would love if I would join. They would love if I would go with them and just be with them. And I got very frustrated why he thinks he could wake me up in the morning. And no, I don't want to go. There's nothing. I don't want to go. And I roll around, and he was okay with that. I roll around, and something just nudged me inside and told me that I should go. And I did. I went with Dad that morning, and I remember the conversations of being born again. And anyway, when they were kind of done talking and finishing up, and Martin Mann, I don't know, some of you probably know him, but he's the owner there, and he asked me if I would want to stay, and I did. I was like, I'll talk with him, and he told me about the new birth, and he started telling me stuff, and I didn't understand. There's a lot of things I look back now that were missing from his teaching, and I don't think that he, I don't know, I don't, I guess I'm not sure his heart, but I see that one thing that he was making the Lord Jesus your Lord of your life, that is a very important step. And anyway, before I went home that day, I prayed a prayer. But I see clearly today, as I look back over my life, that it wasn't a true commitment to God. I look back to that point, and it was definitely at that point that God started me on a journey. I don't feel that I was born again that day. If I look back over my past, from that point on, it's just very clear to me that I didn't understand a lot of things and I didn't know what I was actually truly doing that day. Anyway, I went from there. I got introduced to Shekinah. I started going there. Vernon and Joe tremendously helped me walk through some of this stuff. And I got introduced to Fresh Start. I did a 9-month in-house program at Fresh Start in 2015, spring of 2015 to that fall. And it was hard. It was tremendously hard. And I still don't understand to this day why some of the things happened there that did. But I walked out of there, and I was different in the sense of I feel God used that to break me. I went in there proud and arrogant, and nobody could tell me anything. I knew everything, and I with spending a couple from the time I went from Chitters to, and I can't remember the dates exactly, but it was a little bit of a time in there that me and Vernon and Joe really sat down and they showed me a lot of things in the Bible, and they showed me a lot of truth, and it helped me understand, and I used that, and I thought I knew everything, and that's how I went to Fresh Start, and they have a thing in there, and John Andrew could relate with me to this, is they call it sociogram. And that was my biggest enemy, but also the biggest blessing. And throughout the week, they watch each other's lives. And maybe I see something in Ruben's life that He has this habit, and we'll write it down on a paper, and I'll pick one for Elton, and I'll pick one for whoever is there at the time. And then on a Wednesday the following week, we'll sit down as a group of people, of brothers there, and we'll talk about these things. And I'll say, hey, Reuben, I saw you do this last week, or maybe I heard you say something bad, and we'll point out these things in each other's lives. And it was oh so miserable the first couple of weeks. It was brutal. And God used that to break me and to be okay with me, to allow other people to talk into my life and to be okay with that. It's not a bad thing. It's actually a blessing. It's actually, if we can accept that and use that, it can be a building block where if we don't use it as an offense, but use it as a correction, a way of taking another step in the right direction. So I look at Fresh Start and what happened? Why didn't I get born again there? And what, I don't know. We didn't get a lot of teaching on that at Fresh Start. And I look back over Fresh Start, and I feel it was a lot of behavior modifications. I made a lot of changes. I understood myself a lot better than I ever did before. But without God, without Jesus truly being Lord of my life, it didn't last long. I was free and lived in victory for about 6 months, 6 or 7 months. I forget exactly the timeline until I was back into the exact same stuff that I was again before I went, and worse. It seemed every time that I came back, it got worse, and it wasn't long before I was smoking weed, and from that it was cocaine, and from that it just kept going, and deeper and deeper, and I got introduced to some friends in Indiana, and this is from early 20s to 23 is kind of the time span that I really got into drugs. And I got introduced to friends in Indiana. I'd go out there weekends at a time, and that's what we would do. We'd sit and watch movies and just get lost from reality and the pain. And it was completely, completely unaware of what is truly going on. There's times I look back now at incidents as I it's God. It's only God that I'm still here today. And one of those incidents is we were in Indiana, and I was driving a minivan, and I had a load. I think I had 6 or 7 other people with me, and I'll never forget. I will always be able to picture where we were. And we were at a party, and it was time to leave and go home. And this was 2 to 3 o'clock at night, and I knew I wasn't fine to drive, but I knew that the others were in worse shape than I was. So I decided I can drive. I can figure it out, and I'll take my time to get back to where we were sleeping. And out in Indiana, they have these, instead of guardrails along the bridges, they have these high concrete barriers. They're probably 5.5 feet high instead of guardrails. And I remember coming around the curve, and everything was black. And I woke up with a loud bang. And I was like, what was that? And they were like, you hit the guardrail. You bounced, like, and I was going probably 55 miles an hour. And I hit the guardrail, and I bounced back out, and I kept right on going. And we laughed about it that night. And we were like, wow, you're a good driver. And I look back now, and it's just, if I would have hit it, that guardrail, a couple seconds earlier, I would have hit it in the end where it would have been a head-on collision. Or times when I woke up in bed Sunday mornings, and I had no idea how I got here. All I know is I started home, but I didn't. I don't remember ever driving in the driveway, or I don't ever remember crawling into bed. And that continued for years, just trying to deal with the numbness, the pain, the hurt. I didn't understand myself. I hated myself with a passion. I didn't like who I was. I didn't understand how to deal with this, how to get out. How do I... Again, it's just in a place where this is how I'm going to be. I would make these circles of, I would live in sin. And then come a place where this is not who I want to be. This is not the life I want to live. And I would cry out to God, God, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going, but I need help. And then I'd do good for a month or so, and then all of a sudden something would happen, and it would just, I couldn't let go of it. It had such a grip on me that every time a little more pain or something happened, it tripped me up, and I went straight back to it. And that continued until 2022 is when things kind of, October of 2021, I had started working for Mark Miller about a month before, and their Josh became a very, very dear friend to me, very close, and walked with me, and he just showed me that he doesn't care what I'm doing or where I'm in or what I'm, he just wants to be my friend and love me. And in that, one morning, I forget exactly what I was doing. I was at work somewhere. My brother Davis calls me, and he was excited about something. This guy wrote a book about you. This book is about you, and you need to read it. And I was like, yeah, I was like, whatever. But okay. But he was excited. Like, he was more excited than he was at other times. And so I got the book, and I read it, and that book was Pure Life, Pure Desire by Ted Roberts. And I would encourage you young men to read it. It just really helped me in my walk to read it and to reread it. And it just really helps understand the mind, the how pornography, how immorality changes your mind, how the chemicals, and I could talk for a long time, and how that transforms your mind into nothing. It kills it, and how it's actually proven to be worse than drugs. And it just helped, that book really helped me to see that there's hope. I can actually change by renewing my mind, by doing things. I have a chance to renew my mind. And I got really excited about that. And David and my one other brother started meeting with me on a Tuesday mornings, and I started sharing, and I started pouring out things that were in my past, and yeah, I just started opening up, and I got my dates wrong on the year we started that. I'm not quite sure you remember which year that was, but it was a couple of years before I got arrested then, because I got arrested in July of 2022. Is when I got arrested, and I'll just a little bit about that. John Loniker was Sundays we were in the tent meetings, and I'll never forget. I went to the tent meetings that morning, and I didn't want to go. And David kind of told me I should go anyway, and I went and I sat there, and John Loniker had the opening. And what you shared, John, that morning, convicted me so deeply, and it was about when Peter went fishing, and he came back with two nets or a net full, and Jesus said, "Do you love me more than these?" And God put it, just convicted me so badly that morning, and so clearly that I love my sins more than him. I need to let that go, and I didn't know what to do with it. I knew I needed to talk about it, but I was not in the mood to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it. So I, as soon as service was over, I sneaked out the back and I left. I went home, and it was so painful and it was so real. And I went and I smoked and I got high, and I went my way and forgot about it. And the next morning, I got arrested for the case that I got. And I'm not going to go into details about that. If anybody wants to know, an adult or whatever, I'm willing to talk about it. But I got arrested that morning, and I think I'm not quite sure on the day, but I think it was July 15th or somewhere, one of those weekends. It was a Monday morning I got arrested, and as I sat in the police car with my hands cuffed behind my back, I had so much mixed emotions. A part of me was so glad I got caught. Maybe somehow this will be the beginning of a new life. Somehow maybe this will pan out that I won't be this way anymore. But on the other hand side, it looked so big, because I knew without a shadow of a doubt, I'm going to prison. I'm going to get prison time. I didn't know what to do. I They took me to jail. I got booked in. It's my first time ever being in jail, and that's another miracle of God, that I look over my life and all the drugs and everything I was involved in that I didn't get caught before. But there I was in Columbiana County Jail, laying in my boat that night. I cried. I didn't. I was so lost. I didn't know. I just cried out to God that I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going to happen from here, but I want to learn. I want to be taught. I didn't understand. And I wrestled with that for a couple of days, and I was in Columbiana for 4 days before David and them came and bailed me out. In those 4 days, I just really wrestled. What's going to happen? I don't know. Again, there was a part of me that something was telling me that this is the beginning of something different. God is going to use this to change my life. But there's also another part of me that wrestled to trust and to actually just to fully commit. I went home and I spent a week at a cabin praying and seeking God and wrestling with, am I truly born again? At that time, I was still very much hanging on to my experience at Chitters, feeling that was my conversion. I feel I was born again. I wrestled with that, and I just, at the end of the week, I felt at peace. And I don't know, I still don't understand some of those times when I felt that deep peace and of just knowing that I'm okay where I'm at right now. And May 18th, I got sentenced, and I'll never forget walking into the courtroom knowing that it's in the judge's hands, and he gave me 6 months in prison for my case, and that was very gracious. He was very gracious to me. A lot of the people that had the same stuff were getting anywhere from 10 months to a year, and I think that's another miracle from God, that I only got six, and I went to prison. I started seeking. I started reading a lot. I started opening my Bible all day in, day out. What is truly going on? Where am I headed? Over a span of time, I was reading through Exodus and the story of the children of Israel leaving Egypt and out of bondage and over the Red Sea and into the wilderness and how God provided for them and how God just continued to lead them, and even in their wickedness, in their stiff-neckedness, and in they were very I marvel at the mercy of God and how he continued to lift them up and how he continued to be merciful and gracious to them in their wickedness and in their sin. And as I was reading through that one night, I forget exactly the part I was in, but it was one of the times that they had fallen back into their sins and were grumbling to God and were complaining about, why can't we just go back? Why can't we just, we don't want to be here anymore. And as I was reading through that, it just came to me, that's so many times how I am. I'm a stiff-necked person. I don't give up easily, and that's just all of a sudden I saw my life, and that's who I was. I didn't give up, and that night I didn't understand everything, but that night I was I was in a cell with another guy, and there were two bunks, and then there was a big window, maybe this wide and fairly high. It was perfect that you could cross your arms and lean your head on your arms and look out over the compound. And I had a pretty beautiful view of the compound and all the other buildings, and in the night light, in the night all the lights would light up, and it wasn't a beautiful place to be, but yet somehow that night it just captivated me of the beauty of that Stephen's in prison, the trees, and as I was there and I looked out my window, something deep within me or desired to know God, his love, Something drawed me. Something was just, I longed for that, and I started crying. I don't know how to do this. I had no idea how to even go about to come to God and pray. But there was something inside me that just, I yearned to know God and to know that He loved me, that He honestly cared for me, and that I can truly trust Him. And that night, I just, at that time, in tears, I just gave everything to God. I don't understand. I don't know what You have for me, but I just gave Him everything. And that's the night after I prayed, the Spirit of God washed over me more than I've ever experienced it in my life. I knew at that moment that God loved me, and everything that I have to experience ahead of this yet is going to be okay. And I rested in that peaceful peace of knowing that God is here. God is in prison. God is right here with me. And that's the night I gave my life to God, and I endeavored to serve Him, and I endeavored to trust Him and to obey Him. And a couple months later, I was transferred to Belmont Prison. There I met a lot of godly men that were serving God. But I look back and I missed an opportunity in that time of having a time to sit and read. When I got to Belmont, my reading dwindled because I became a friend. I became friends with a guy that kind of took me under his wing and protected me and kept me. And we did a lot of things together, and he was a tremendous blessing. But he also kept me from studying, from reading, and let's go watch a football game instead of going to church. And there's a level of fear that was in my heart still at that time of people around me and not knowing how people will react and how people... Yeah, I don't know, I was just still kind of afraid of prison. Anyway, I was released on November 15th of 2023. I got out. I got out with a heart full of anger and bitterness. 2 weeks before I was released, I want to be very, very, very careful how I say this. I don't want to make this person look bad or cast any shade or anything on his name, but I got word from Faith that I won't be able to come back to Faith when I get released. And that really hurt. That really, really, really hurt. And at that moment, in those last 2 weeks, I questioned everything about church. I didn't understand. How could a church do that? How could a people that tell me that they're truly serving God and truly walking with God, tell somebody that's searching and that just experienced God for the first time really, and to tell them that I myself established there. I knew everybody, and a lot of people knew my story, and I came out that way, and I was very, very angry and bitter, and I struggled with that for a couple months until it ate me up. I didn't want to go to church. I didn't care about church anymore, and it came to the point where I saw that I have to do something. Either I'm going to completely turn my back and forget about my experience in prison and just go live my life, or I'm going to have to forgive. I'm going to have to sit down, and I'm going to have to talk with Him, and I did that. We sat and we talked, and I still don't understand a lot of things that went on with that situation. But one thing I do know, I'm at peace, and I can visit that guy without any problem. I can talk with him and not have any animosity or bitter feelings for him today. I'm thankful for that God helped me to lay that down and forgive. Over that time, I had a meeting with John Loniger and with Simon here about coming to church here and about attending, and I shared my testimony, and again, in a lot of it out of, I don't know, I still hadn't talked to Mark, so I was still angry and bitter with that, and I was wrestling with that. So a lot of the stuff I shared weren't clear, and John bless his heart, questioned my new birth that day. And I was okay. I was okay with it, but what kind of hurt more than anything is they didn't talk to me again after that. I think me and John met one time after that, and they kind of left me sitting. And that's okay. I understand today better. We talked about it, but it hurt to, again, here I go again. I'm alone. At that time, I wasn't really allowed to come to church because of my restrictions, my parole. That was hard. I was home a lot. I went to work. I came home. I didn't have any friends because that's how it seemed. I knew I had friends, but it was hard to associate. Everybody's busy. I didn't want to reach out, and everybody had their lives, but it got really tough. About 8 months after I got out, one day I was at work, and I gave up. This is hopeless. And jumping back a little bit, when I got out of prison the first time, we went to Coshocton, and I had to meet with my parole officer, and we sat down and we talked about it. And then after, he was like, he wants to look up my sanction time. And if I say sanction time, that means the time, if I violate my parole, how long they can put me back into prison for. And he looked that up, and he went over it, and he kind of got a grin on his face, and was like, they can only send you back for 3 months if you violate your parole. And he would advise me to do it, like, why I don't do it. And something inside me was like, well, that's actually dumb. To go do 3 months instead of 5 years is almost no question. But there's something inside of me that didn't seem right either, because I couldn't just go to the office and say, hey, I want to go do my 3 months. I actually had to have a violation in order to, where it violated my parole, and I had to go to do that time. That Wednesday at work, I just had enough. I'm done. I'm going to do it. It just doesn't make any sense anymore that I'm out of here, that I'm alone, that I can't fellowship at church, that I can't see my family. It just didn't make sense anymore, and I did. I went on a website again that I know it's going to trigger it, and I was very careful to make sure that I wouldn't catch another case. I did it in a way to where I couldn't catch another case, but to where it would trigger some of my restrictions that I had on my parole. And that's what it did. About 20 minutes after I did it, I got a text message from my PO that said he needs to see me. He needs to see me in his office the next morning. And I knew what he wanted. Looking back now, I'm glad I did the 3 month. I'm glad that I'm able to be here today. But what I'm sorry for, and what grieves my heart, is that I didn't include family, that I didn't include you here as a church, and that we didn't have a conversation about it, and we talked about it, and it would have saved a lot of trust, and it would have saved a lot of relationships if I would have done that. And that's what I want to apologize for you to you as a church this morning, and to brothers, that I didn't communicate better, that I didn't bring it to you and talk to you about it and get advice and what's the best way and to so you guys know what's happening instead of just doing it on my own, which was very selfish. I'm sorry for that. Anyway, I went to county jail, and this is my favorite part of my story. I went to county jail, and somehow, some way, I walked in those doors, and I knew I was supposed to be here. It felt like, I don't know, there was just the Spirit of God was upon me. I felt like this is where God wanted me. And I wrestled with what I had done for the next couple of days. And finally, I got on my face and I just repented. God, I'm sorry, I messed up. I realized what I did was very selfish. It was of my own motives. And I'm sorry. And I just poured my heart out to God that I want this next 3 months to be a month where I learn to know him, who he is. Why am I the way I am? What is going on in my life that I continue to be angry and to be bitter? And what is truly going on in my heart? And I started reading my Bible again every day. I wake up and I read, and I started memorizing. I memorized Colossians 3, and I read and I read. And It seemed every time that I read, I pick up my Bible to read, and I read, and it was faith. Over and over again, it would be faith this, and faith that, and the faith of this man, and faith here. It's just every time faith popped out on the pages, over and over and over again. And I had conversations with David and with other brothers. Why? I understand faith. I know what faith is. I have faith that God is who he says he is and that he is my Lord and my Savior. And I have faith in that. And I just didn't get it. I wrestled with that. And I continued to read and it continued to happen. And 30 days later, I was transferred to Lorraine. Lorraine is the person they keep all the parole violate, people that violate their parole. That's the prison where everybody stays for that. And I was transferred there. I was transferred into intake, and I sat on my bed one afternoon, and I was reading again, and it was faith, just faith. And I was getting frustrated with this. Why? I understand faith. I know. And then that afternoon, evening, every 4 o'clock came around, I called David. I think we missed 3 or 4 times in the 3 months that I was locked down that I didn't call David. And that was always just a very special time for me to call David and to tell him what I had read and the sermon I had listened to or how God had spoken to me that day. And that day I talked to David and I told him again, just I'm so frustrated with this faith thing. I need answers. What is going on? And we talked about faith again. That's how I feel. And he had to go, and he hung up. And I kind of flung myself back on my bunk and just, God, what am I missing? Faith. I get it. I have it. What is it? What am I missing? And at that moment, God started speaking to me. God's Spirit came upon me and says, you have faith, yes, but your heart is full of mistrust and unbelief. It was so real. What? And it came to me again, just very clearly, your heart is full of unbelief, mistrust. And I wrestled with that. How? I struggled with that for a day or so, and one night I was in the shower, and that was usually my prayer time. It was the only time you kind of had privacy on your own, away from everybody else. And I was usually spend a while in there, and I was just praying, God, show me how unbelief and mistrust, how does that look? And at that moment it came to me, all these little moments that I shared about my dad, about the dump truck. I remembered that situation at the dump truck. A time we went fishing that I tore my hook off and Dad told me to sit there and wait till he's done fishing. Just all these little incidents all my life that God started pointing at. I said, out of those, you mistrust your dad. You didn't believe your dad. And he said, that's the cause of that is how you view me today. I crumble. How? I trust you. No, you don't. That's how you treat me today. People come to you and people want to help you. And then they say something a little bit wrong or say something that's hard and you run. You put up walls. It's mistrust. You can have unbelief and not have mistrust. They go hand in hand. If I don't trust Owen, I'm not going to believe what he says. And that happened so many times in my life that people came and helped me and wanted to help me and I didn't believe him because I didn't trust him. And at that moment, I came before God and I repented of unbelief. Confessed that I had sinned and that I allowed unbelief and mistrust to rule in my life for so many years. Just poured it out to God. And after I did that, something changed in my heart. Something, I can't put it into words, but something changed. And I just stood there for a little bit. It's different. That that peace, that knowing, that deep knowing that I felt as I leaned on my windowsill, it was back. I felt that again, of knowing that God is right here with me right now. And I knew it. And as I continued those 2 months, there's three sermons that were really, really life-changing, and that God used while I was in prison, that just really spoke to me and helped me with that unbelief. And I'm just going to, in very brief, share those three sermons. And the first one is out of Luke 17. You don't have to turn there, but Luke 17 in verse 32. It's a very short verse. Remember Lot's wife. Why? Remember Lot's wife. And as the guy was teaching, as the guy went through that, and Jesus was talking about the end days, and remember Lot's wife. What is about Lot's wife? And it captivated me. I'm going to turn to Genesis. What is about Lot's wife? Genesis 19, we read of that occasion, of how the angels came to Abraham, and he said, if there's 10, and he said, yeah, if there's 10 righteous can be found, that he won't destroy Sodom. And they weren't found. And anyway, the angels went to Sodom, and they went to Lot and told him, get out. And I'm just going to jump in verse 12. I'm not sure how much I'll read, but next couple of verses. Then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here, son-in-laws or sons or daughters or whomever you have in the city? Take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against the Lord has grown great. Outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord. The Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and spoke with his son-in-laws, who had married his daughters, and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his son-in-laws, he seemed to be joking. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife, take your daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in punishment of the city. And while he lingered, the men took him by his hand, his wife's hand and his daughter's hand, two daughters' hands, and the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out of the city and set him outside the city. So it came to pass, when they brought him outside, that he said, escape for your lives. Do not look back, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest ye be destroyed. And they went, and I'm just going to read verse 26 yet. But his wife looked back behind him and became a pillar of salt. And as I listened to that message, and as I pondered these verses, what about Lot? She looked back, and again at that moment the Spirit of God came and said, You keep looking back. And as long as we keep looking back into our past, as long as we keep hanging on to our past, we're stuck. We won't move. We won't go anywhere. And that God just showed me so clearly that day that He's asking me to stop looking back, to move forward, to trust that where He is taking me is better than where I'm coming from. And sometimes that's hard. While he lingered, I think there were some possessions. I don't know. The way it sounds, it was in a very brief moment that it was. I don't think they packed bags and that they had a whole bunch of stuff to take with them. And Lot's wife was consumed by those. I don't know what she left, but it's very clear she left daughters. She left family. She left maybe a new house they just built, or all these possessions, whatever it may be. And that's how it was for me. I was stuck on my drugs. I was stuck on women, all these things, and how to let them go and to stop looking back. And God just very clearly told me and asked me that day to let go and to trust. Again, it comes into that trust and to believe that where he is taking me is better and far greater than where I'm coming from. And that day I made a commitment to trust God, that where he's taking me is far greater than where I'm coming from. So that was one of them. The other one was out of Ephesians 4. I'm just going to jump in verse 7 and read a couple of verses. But to each of us grace was given according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, he says, when he ascended on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. Now this, he ascended. What does it mean but that he also first descended into the lower parts of the earth? He who descended is also the one who ascended far above all the heavens, that he might fill all things. He himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, some teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine, by trickery of men and cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. And I want to go back to verse 12. That is what for the equipping of the saints. He gave prophets, apostles, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the equipping of the saints. And that equipping caught my attention. And God clearly showed me that I missed my equipping. Because I didn't trust. I didn't believe people that he sent into my life. And all of a sudden, as I sat there in my chair in front of my cell, all of a sudden I saw all the people that from very young age all the way up to where I was there that tried to help me, that ministered into my life, that spoke kind words, that were there for me at late hours, that helped me and that ministered to me, and that was for my equipping. And I missed it. I missed it. And it broke my heart at that moment that I realized, man, I had such an amazing opportunity. If I would have listened, if I would have just been broken and humble and been okay if it hurt and would have continued to push through that hurt and listened and not built walls and allowed my heart to become bitter and angry, I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Equipping to prayer. Yeah, I was captivated by that last night as I was reading through this. What is actually equipping? Is to prepare, to furnish or provide proper equipment for a certain situation. Camping or war, or there's an equipping that goes. Tools. I had to think of tools. When we go to build a house, we equip ourselves with the proper tools. And when we don't have the proper tools, it doesn't work. And God just clearly showed me that I missed a lot of my equipping in my younger years of the tools and the things that he wanted me to have. But I'm very thankful this morning that God is merciful and that God is gracious and that he... That can still be done, that I still have the opportunity to do that, and that I still have the opportunity to now learn and to allow God as I submit myself to authority. And that's another thing that played into this as he preached the sermon, was authority and how we need, if we don't submit to under authority, we can't be equipped. And how, yeah, he just showed me the importance of being submitted to authority and how... What a blessing it has been already to submit to my dad under his authority, to the ministry, to the church. And that's my heart as I continue to walk with you as a church and as my family, is to submit, to be submitted, and to walk together. And the last one, it's a very brief one, and I'm not going to expound a lot on it. But in the last 5 days, I kind of, before getting out, release of my 3 month sentence, I just, God, what is when I get out? What do you want from me? Where do you want me to go? And I just fasted and I prayed, and And I was reading through Mark one day, and it came to me when he went over the sea, and the man that was possessed with a demon couldn't be bound in chains and shackles, and he lost his mind. He was cutting himself with stone, and he cried to Jesus afar off, "I implore you that don't torture me." And Jesus told him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." And the spirit went into the swine, and that whole situation. And he sat, closed, and in his right mind, they were afraid. They were scared. What is going on? What happened? And what captivated me was when he came into and verse 17. I'm gonna start at verse 17. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their reach. And when he got into the boat, he who had been possessed begged him that he might be with him. So here was this demon-possessed man that was healed by Jesus, was cast out, was closed, he was in his right mind, and he was like, "Man, I want to go with Jesus. I want to go where he's going. I want to be with him." And what Jesus said is what captured me. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you, and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. And that just, God spoke to me so much. That's my heart, is to tell people, to tell my friends, to tell the world of what Jesus has done, the compassion that he's had on me by allowing me to have another chance, by taking me to prison in order to catch my attention, to do the work that needed to be done in my heart. And I can say today that prison has been the biggest blessing of my life. It's been hard, wasn't easy, but it did in my heart what I prayed for so long that God would do. So I stand before you today, a desire to walk with you as a brotherhood. I'm not perfect still. There's still struggles in my life that I struggle with and I wrestle with. But as he's, I think it's in, I forget it, in Romans, Colossians 2 talks about it, and also in Romans 6, I think it is, where he talks about burying the old man, being baptized in Jesus. And that's my desire, is to be baptized, to have a funeral for my old self. To bury him. I don't know that man anymore. I don't know who he is. Sometimes it's a struggle to forget him. Sometimes it's hard not to look back and to remember all of the things that I left behind. Sometimes they look valuable. Sometimes they look like they could actually offer me something yet. But to remember to continue to looking forward and to continue to put on that new man. So that's my heart in this, is to be open to you as brothers. So I shared, I maybe said something, and I think back over my story, and there's a lot of things that I missed. I think of a time, I'm going to share this because this is actually a very important time. After getting out of jail, I found myself in a cellar of a lady, friend I knew, and we had done some drugs, and we weren't in our right minds, and Satan showed up in more of a real way than I ever experienced Satan. And that's enough. If somebody wants to hear the whole story, I'll be willing to share it. I don't feel it's fitting to share it with the younger children. But if anybody here wants to hear my full testimony of a grown adult, or wants to hear it, I'd be willing to share. But I just want to open up myself. That if you see anything, that I shared anything, and if there's questions, and if there's concerns of how I am conducting myself in my life and dress, and I want to be open and to receive correction in that. So thank you for your attentiveness. Thank you for what you've done for me as a church, and walking with me and continuing to love me and allowing me to come back after the 3-month sentence. And I'm
So grateful that I get to be here, and that I get to worship and to walk with you guys. God bless.